And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And you know, a year ago, exactly, I had the pleasure of meeting Albert Clayton Golden, and we talked about his new book, which is, what is it? It's You're Not Who You Think You Are. And after that interview, which was a wonderful interview, he suggested maybe that we interview him on Signs and Wonders, which is the book that he wrote prior to that. Now, Signs and Wonders really is really all of the ways that sort of God talks to us, the language that God talks to us. And right before we started this interview, we were chatting, and I think this is going to go a lot different ways than what initially was how we planned for this. But I'm very excited about this because I think Albert is one of the most authentic and whole people I've met, even though he, you know, acknowledges himself as flawed and has seen, you know, different sides of himself, and certainly is very honest and authentic about, you know, his journey on this life and how he's gotten to where he's gotten. So I think it's really important that we connect with these types of people, because as we are growing and as we are changing, this is really the work that we need to do. So welcome, Albert.
Well, it's good to be back with you. I enjoyed your show before, and I'm sure we'll have a good time today.
I'm sure we will. So really, the first part of your book was your journey, which is really a fascinating story, only because you're so honest and so authentic about it. And it's really refreshing when people look at their shadows, face their shadows, and then grow from them and allow others to look at that, because there are so many people out there that are, you know, doing the spiritual bypass and really not connecting in with the areas that we need to look at. And so I think that's really where we're probably going to start and move into a lot of the work that we were talking about right before we started the show. So, but do tell us a little bit about the journey that you had and why it was sort of instrumental in getting you to where you are now.
Well, first of all, I want to let people know several things, because it's very, very important. You know, before we came on the air today, I talked about having blood on the knee, and I went to the orthopedic surgeon, and I have osteoarthritis, and he recommends a knee replacement. But he said, you know what, I'm picking up on your energy, and I nearly fainted, because, you know, doctors, lawyers, they all have those books they read, as a lot of religious and spiritual people do, too. And psychologists, they go by book learning and not feeling the person. And I said, I think I'll stay for round two with this guy. He said, I'm going to give you a steroid and put a shot in yesterday, and I'm going to Paris in 2 weeks for the French Open. But let me tell you, the club feet is very, very important. And I say this to people because look at how you came in. You know, and I came in, I lived in a hospital, mainly on rather than off, on and off, for 3 years at Duke Hospital. I'm in the Duke medical journals because he shaped and cast my feet. Now, it's not my feet I have problems with. If you saw my feet, you would think they were perfect. It's the knees that don't support the hip and the feet because of the profile of the legs. So that was my first indicator. Second, I began to see and hear differently than other people. And then when I was, like, going to Sunday school and going to, you know, regular school, what did I do? I became the darling of the teachers, and I learned those scriptures, and Jesus loves me, this I know, and I gave all the right answers, made all the A's and whatever. And then I thought, gosh, something is off here. And when I would read about, you know, like Jezebel, and read about crucifying Christ or whatever, I mean, I had great empathy for those people, because I thought that they were kind of exciting my dark side. And, you know, the rest of my story is, thank God I found booze instead of the ministry, because I went to ministerial school for 1 year. Now, I'm going to segue back to Signs and Wonders, because that's what we want to talk about. All along the way, there were signs, not working, not working, not working, keep smiling, narcissism, keep smiling, keep quoting scripture, keep doing what everybody tells you to do. And then when I got out of divinity school, I went to work in a law firm. Can you believe that? From the ministry to law firm, same group of people. So then the law firm, I thought they were very bright. They were elitist, and I thought, oh, so you have to be better than other people. Not. So anyway, I went that route for a while, and then one day I was delivering divorce papers to a blousy blonde with all the jewelry and the peignoir and whatever, you know, Southern girls. Mm. And she asked me to have a drink with her to celebrate her divorce, and I did. First drink, first drunk in a 20-year run. Now, signs and wonders. I'll tell you that the way that I got sober was when I was in the police car and the last drug driving, the voice said, you know, that still small voice that you can hear when you turn down the chattering classes in the head and stop talking. In the back with that, you know, netting and steel bar between you and the driver, the voice said, the jig is up. You're done drinking. As loudly as I'm saying it to you, it almost flooded the police car. So then I went to the court about 4 or 5 months later, went to AA to make them think I was a good boy, and I couldn't believe, because I went without an attorney, that she gave me a very small fine, told me to go to AA for a year, and I did, and the rest is history. But along the way, signs and wonders. Now, let me bring you kind of up to date with you. It's like, for instance, you know, your whole show, your whole being. I go on your website. It's all about intuition. Well, guess what? We've just been through, you know, I'm also an astrointuitive. We've just been through a very hard 6 or 8 weeks. Just came out of Mercury retrograde on Monday, Tuesday, and we've had Pluto Uranus in opposition, and that's been very, very difficult. So I feel like that in a way we're going to get a breather in June. So if people are listening to you today, I'm a sign and a wonder that now you know why we've been through a difficult period, because somebody who tends to know what he's talking about, he's made a good living at it, has brought some new news. And in June, people can begin to pick up the mantle of what their assignment was. Right. I mean, believe you me, we're not the only two people around that are sick and tired of being sick and tired of the way we lived for a long time.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that my life is a sign and a wonder every single day. Hmm. When all of this stuff started with what was a difficult time, then I blew my knee. But I've been working with this off and on for 4 or 5 weeks. See my time period?
Hmm.
So now the doctor gave me the steroid. He said, you know, I just want to see how you do, because sometimes this works for a year or two, and said, come back and I'll do your right knee. So I feel like that the sign and wonder of that was born clubfooted, 72 years old today, knees not supporting, right doctor came in, and the sign and the wonder is stand on your own 2 feet, which is what the club feet were all about. Mm. So, I don't know, I'm really trying to inspire people to listen to themselves. You know, that's what intuition's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I'm glad to be on with you and talking about this today.
Well, it seems to be a timely thing, because even though you wrote this a few years ago, I mean, it's certainly everybody is trying to connect in with that language. And, you know, we all are so unique. Everybody seems to do it in their own ways, and their soul speaks to them uniquely, and we have that unique gift that is our own to offer the world. But it that way that we, you know, understand God's language is unique to everybody, and everybody wants, you know, the formula. Well, what's the formula? Well, you've given everything in your book to...
But let me give you one. Let me talk to people today about one, and I want you to know something. You ask me anything, and I'll tell the truth, so help me God, as they say in court. Forgiveness is really important, because I recently have had in my own situation to face that, you know, they seem rather minor, but anything minor, you know, for want of a nail, the war was lost, as the limerick goes. And so being at odds with somebody, even if it's a salesperson or a waiter, or someone that you think you know, I'll mention thinking you're better than the elitist of lawyers. Well, even if you think you're better than, some people divide their worlds up so that I'm about to read a book called The Help, you know, about maids in the South during the civil rights. But I feel like that forgiveness is a huge piece to be clear enough to see the signs and wonders when they appear.
And I think, you know, forgiveness, although it is around everywhere and everybody talks about it, not everybody understands it quite the way they need to really truly forgive. Because, you know, when it comes right down to it, it's often ourself that usually has to do the forgiving, because we're the one that's doing the judgment. We're the one that's, you know, finding the fault. We're the one that's, you know, looking at people in the way. And, you know, truly everything has its own reason. But you're right. Like, if we don't come to forgiveness, we'll never get to gratitude. And if we can't get to gratitude, you know, we can't have an opening of our hearts. And I think that's, you know, one of the areas that truly, even though we know it, we don't always live it. It's, you know, it's huge.
You know, 7-8 years ago, I was speaking on Mother's Day in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and all the blue hairs were there. And I got up and I said, oh, I'm so surprised that this darling minister asked me to come speak on this day because I never liked my mother. Oh. And so at the end, of course, I say how much I love my mother. Then a woman stood up at the questions and answers. She said, Albert, I really love things you write, and I liked most of what you said. And she said, every day, not just on Mother's Day, would you start by telling us how much you loved your mother and what a high master teacher she was, and then tell us about how it always wasn't that way? That was so genius that I then began to get another texture of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Start out with the forgiveness and maybe back into where the difficulty was and end with what forgiveness brought to you. So you see how people do. I mean, I was just thinking today when we were getting into the subject about, I remember there was a teacher I had. I mean, I call her the late and great Dr. Files, and she was my French teacher and French history teacher. And one day we were in class, and she knew I'd been out a long time, and the final was the next week. And she asked a question, and I answered. She said, oh, that's so good. She said, I totally agree with you. That's not what I said 5 weeks ago when you were in the hospital. But she said, what a great point. If that's on the final, give your answer, not mine. See, she was collaborative. Mm-hmm. She was kind of going through the rich texture of learning or remembering. You know, I say you never learn, you remember. Well, the truth of the matter is, I think I was in the French Revolution, and she knew that because when I took the final, she gave me an A, and the dean said, I don't think he's had enough classwork. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you know, we're thinking about having people do out of the classwork work, sign up and stay away and hand in the paper. So, you know, I was a precursor to that because that was 40-something years ago. But I feel like that in a way, when we talk about the signs and wonders, you have to know what to go for. I'm going to give an example. I had a woman recently that said to me, oh, I went through that 3 years of detoxifying relationships with men and whatever. And she said, and I just know that this one is so different. I should be very careful because you have not talked about the rich energy level, the resonance, the vibration, the frequency. You've talked about how he so touches your hand and how he's building these dream weavings with you and whatever. Well, 6 weeks later, she called me and she said, my God, I'm going to call you every time I'm going out with somebody, because she said, the next thing I know, he's stole my credit card and cleaned out my ATM machine. And so I told her, you didn't watch for the right signs, because everything that you haven't cleared and cleaned from before will revisit you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the work that we have to do. I mean, that is the work. And whether we're forgiving someone or we're forgiving ourselves, you know, getting into that space, that's, you know, that is the work we do. That's facing the shadow. That's working with, you know, those aspects of ourselves that we, like shame, for example. It's one of those areas that we don't even know we're doing it, whether we're doing it to ourselves or, you know, trying to be that nice person that we think we're supposed to be because we were told, you know, how to be instead of, you know, being okay with who we are. So, you know, shame is a huge area that's becoming, you know, also an area that is huge in our growth and development. Yet it's such an interesting area because we don't think about it. We don't, you know, it's so common in our everyday experience that, you know, it's just what we do.
You know, in that book, what I thought that I did a pretty good job with, because I heard to do it, you know, I think we're all just kind of scribes taking notes from our inspiration in the sky. But, you know, I talk a lot about interconnected and interrelated.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you, we'll go through some of the language in the book, mm-hmm. synchronicity. Well, I was in Alabama in the mid-80s. And early 80s, really, and I was giving a lecture on soulmates. And it was in a small bookstore, but they had about 100 people. She cleared, I mean, I don't know why, because that's my hometown. I had not been back there. I met somebody at the astrology convention in Chicago. She talked me into coming back. She got me a speaking engagement at this bookstore. And I decided to speak on soulmates. You know, we're talking 25 years ago, so we were still wasting our energy on that. You know, you don't, if anybody comes to me and says, oh, my soulmate, I say, you mean like Carolyn May says, your wound mate, or I say cellmate, C-E-L-L. Well, and in that lecture, of all things, was a man who came up afterward and said, I'd like to have you do my chart. And so I took his name, or somebody with me did. And he came 2 or 3 days later, and he decided he wanted to come to the Sedona Intensive. Mm-hmm. And he did come, and there were some things that happened here that totally changed a book he was writing. Mm-hmm. And then he came and came again, and his wife came a couple of times, and I'm still on retainer with him. He's got his next book coming out, and he got a huge advance. His name is James Redfield. Mm-hmm. So that's synchronicity. Mm-hmm. I mean, James said to me, why did I come there? And I said, why did I come there? I said, my God, I always say, you know, and that, and, you know, I've really improved. I used to say the dumb Doras are come back to the South because they'll do Bub and Wanda until God strikes them either dead or electrocutes them into the super consciousness. But it was all because we should meet. Now, in that one lecture is my dearest friend. She was my booking agent there for 20 years. We're closer than thieves. There was another woman who had been a Miss Alabama that I was in the chorus. She was 5 years older than I. When she was in Little Theater there, she came. She went to Egypt with me. I'm trying to show and tell to your audience that, you know, this is synchronicity. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a latter day of synchronicity. Somebody optioned, you're not who you think you are. And I paid to have a pretty good screenwriter write the script, and I thought it was pretty good. Then, Sign and Wonder, a man that I had met here who was in the music business, had a brother who was in the film business. And a month ago, 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, I was at a little cafe having coffee. Well, the music guy had his screenwriter guy there, and the music guy had to go off, but I stayed and talked an hour and a half. This guy came to my house. He said, send me everything you've ever written. Well, he's now kind of taken over the project. He's a genius. Hmm. Now, he worked at 30 years for William Morris, and he produced in one of the biggest grossing movies ever, and he stayed connected and given me notes about how to change the script, and it's getting better and better. I'm trying to show people God doesn't love me more. My business partner, Scott, 13 years ago, waiting tables at a restaurant. I live on the golf course of the restaurant inside the golf course where he was working. And 13 years later, he's a business partner and had a hellacious career not being able to find the right woman. He's now married, having twins in October. I'm telling you, my life, the room is full of old souls that said, I will see you again. Now, I've had those people that came to give me some tough lessons, like that first wife of mine. And, you know, I used to stand in a lecture and say, a bad woman is better than a good man until I met four bad women in a row. And then I said, a bad person is a bad person. And then I'm not a Catholic, but I was a recovering Catholic from other lives. I cross myself like Catholics say, Holy Mary, Mother of God, when I say that those women were better than bad women, better than good men. But you see, God, I'm just going to say, you know, because I love your show because you can say anything, but God is a clown. I think he's saying, Albert gets it. The planet Earth is a reform school. Mm-hmm. You can either make your corrections and come back and keep the high currency and frequency of the real consciousness, or you have to keep coming back till you get it right. And of course, I'm a Joseph Campbell fiend who said that Lucifer had a fight with God and said he wanted to be God, and God said, you know, don't let the door hit you in the rear. So that's how we got. So God created the earth because he didn't want us to be homeless. And this is where the corrections are made.
Yeah.
And anyway, at my age, I'm still trying. I'm still working with people. They still climb up the hill to go through the Sedona Intensive. I have a very active phone practice. You know, I'm going to be in Chicago, I don't know, soon to do the big Unity thing. And I'm hoping to sell another book, and I have great hopes that we'll sell this movie by the fall.
Yeah, I think that'll be a very unique and interesting movie. I certainly would recommend everybody I know to go see it. I think it would be, you know, it's about time that we started looking at some of these areas because, you know, as you say, like there's so much on TV that is distracting us and the media is, you know, manipulating us. And, you know, discernment is one of the things you talk about in this book. But I mean, it's so important to learn, you know, how to discern what is truly something we need to look at and what is, you know, especially with regards to signs and wonders, you know, what is truly here to be an inspiration and to provide us with truth and what is here to, you know, lead us down the wrong path just to help us on our journey.
You know, and also, Laura, I want to remind people, thank God for what you don't have, as well as for what you do have. Now, I have to say that, you know, I tell off on myself because God knows I'm flawed, but I do like first-class seats on airplanes, and I like the right seat in a restaurant, and I'm a hotel junkie, you know, and I tell people, well, you can pay me less, but put me in luxury. I don't know. It was just something from another life. Now, I was on a big estate out in Long Island, Southampton, within the month, and those people redid their house. I've known them 12 years. They redid their house, and they call this the Albert Wing. And it's the biggest room in the thing. It's my bedroom and private bath and whatever. I was laying in bed one night after I went to a movie and had a great dinner, and the husband's a great cook. And before I started reading my book, the voice had a kind of mind-to-mind conversation and said, aren't you so glad you don't have to pay for the $5 million house? Aren't you so glad you didn't play that $4,000 lawn bill that they have every month? Aren't you really glad that they picked you up in their comfortable car so that you didn't have to pay $400 to get here from the airport? I mean, that voice never stopped, and I said, thank you, God, for the things I don't have. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm telling you, people have got to get with it because, listen, I work with the rich and famous. I work with movie stars. I work with Wall Street types, even work with royalty. Do you know how many times an actor that probably has $100 million will say to me, I can't get off drugs, I can't get off of alcohol, I can't quit womanizing, I sit here in this empty place wondering, why me? You know, that's why there is so much addiction, and I traced my own back to that, back to the title, You're Not Who You Think You Are. An actor is never who he thinks he is because he keeps changing roles. That's part of the graciousness of God with the invention of the film business, is that we get to see all these movies, and oftentimes it's as much about failure and redemption and learning curves and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Which is a huge thing for all of us. Just even, you know, if we're not leading that life that we wanting, you know, which, you know, everybody sort of needs to get out and have their own life. But, you know, it is an opportunity for us to work through things as we watch others that are not, that is really just a game, and we're watching them, although life sort of is a game. But, you know, it's fascinating how much time and how much energy we put into, you know, watching others, and it's just fascinating.
But also, let me say this, because I always tell people we have to break the mold. There's several words, you know, that I use, and one of them is you've got to break the mold, and that means somewhat your own DNA, your own rules and regulations you grew up with, because, you know, I went from voting for Republicans for 50 years, and thank God we got a black president. But the point is that I think you have to break the mold, and I had to break it. And you have to take as much as your karma, you know, that's the unresolved issues from other lives, you have to take as much of your karma and redeem yourself by overcoming that as you can. For instance, I mentioned being in somebody else's house, thanking God I didn't have to maintain that, but they loved me enough that I'd helped them enough that they wanted me around. Mm-hmm. And there are times when I feel that you have to quit doing the poor little old me's, you know, and you have to say, look, I'm going to deal with me. I'm not putting anybody else on a pedestal. You know, I spend 3 minutes in every lecture that I do. I say, let me let you peek behind the curtain. And I always tell the people the things that I might still be struggling with. And I said, and I hope that we can start this out, that I'm eyeball to eyeball. And sometimes I sit on the stage, or I'll sit down in a chair at the stage level. So I'll say, now we've equalized. I said, because the only way you turn your eyes up, I think, is to follow your own star, you know, in the sky. And that's what I say to people when I do the chart. You're the star, and you're the center of your own universe. And somebody said, well, what happened to God? I said, well, God's within you. So if God's within you, and you're the manifestation of God, and you speak through the voice of intuition, you know, the spokesperson of God within you, then that wholeness, you know, Christians would call it the Trinity, then you are the center of your own universe. And then break the mold. If Daddy was a drunk, and you are too, get sober. If Mother was a chiseler, get more honest. And if you had a sister that tried to marry up, you know, stay single and marry unilaterally. I mean, marry an equal. But I think that people have to break a mold. I mean, I will tell you that sometimes when I see these heartening statistics that more people are preferring, you know, spirituality to religion, that heartens me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, actually, there are some churches that are trying to, you know, phony up, like they're giving you a spiritual entree, and then you get inside in the same old dogma. You know, I really do believe that we are at a very critical mass time, and these planets moving are showing us that. And I think that the whole resolution of the return to the planet Earth is to be as you are, an androgyne who chose to be a man or a woman, and to handle your karma, and don't get too attached to what the ego tells you, because, you know, in 12 steps we say money, property, and prestige were the killers. So, I mean, you really have to find some sense of continuity, in resonance and frequency with the transcendent, you know, which we can do other things that I say gets you to your signs and wonders language is prayer and meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, meditation is as important as prayer because people need to listen far more than they need to tell, because I think that higher consciousness knows, and you can offer it up. But, I mean, prayer and meditation and, you know, taking a life inventory. My God, when these people tell me, all you need to do is say hallelujah, and I'm thinking, are you crazy? That woman weighs 450 pounds, and she ate a dozen hot dogs on the way to see the new bright light of spirituality or religiosity.
Yeah.
You know, a woman told me once, like he came on the air and said, you know, he's real and he's flawed and whatever. She said, and, you know, we may work her into my movie. She says when I come on, and, you know, she's a woman that's really kind of wild and very popular on the air. I said, you better watch out or you'll turn into Miss Oprah, who's leaving the big stage. But this woman always says, you know, there's something about this guy that really gets under my skin. And every time I go back read a chapter, I'm on my knees or I'm softening my presentation a little bit. But anyway, then the phone's ringing off the hook and the people come to Sedona and whatever. But what's funny about her, she says, but I met him once. And she said, excuse me for not standing. I know this is the only seat, but both of my knees are quivering. And, you know, she said, nobody does that. You know, somebody trying to be a faux gentleman would lean against the wall and let you think he was drunk instead of bad knees. But I feel like that people, in order to get to themselves, have got to quit putting people on pedestals. Why do you think that if we're all actors, which we are, Shakespeare says all the world's a stage, so if we're all actors, haven't all these people that you thought they were one thing, whether it's Tiger Woods, whether it's that senator, that congressman, that actor, that Wall Street person, that governor of New York, I mean, if those people weren't who they thought they were or who you thought they were, then what are you doing looking up to them? I Tiger Woods, I kind of forgave quickly because I loved his golf, and I said, now we know that it's all been a sham and whatever, but what we do know is that until he got into trouble at Thanksgiving, that except for this year, he came back at the Masters, his golf hadn't gotten very good, but he's had a lot to deal with. The point I'm making is, quit looking up and venerating. Do not let your children get tattooed from head to foot because those vampire movies are out. I'm telling you, I saw a woman at lunch yesterday. She was tattooed. She had the prettiest face, and I kept squishing my chair around so that I didn't have to look at her because I know the Maori tribes people, they're in the New Zealand area, they can have it. But I really want people to stop doing what other people are doing.
Yeah.
I don't care whether it's Miley Cyrus or Billy Graham.
It's true. We certainly get caught up in, the whole bit about seeing someone as better than us. I mean, it's still a judgment that we're making, and it's still, you know, we're still in the eyes of not seeing ourselves as the incredible being that we are. We're
Let
not.
Let me tell you a story, because this is signs and wonders. Synchronicity, whatever. About a month ago or less, a man got on a plane and came to Sedona because he got first book, second book, Signs and Wonders, You're Not Who You Think You Are, and he and his wife got on the plane. Now, this is his story. To come see me. Well, I don't have my address and anything, so here's what happened to him. He thought the first two books were written about me, and they were all about past lives and whatever. And the day they arrive, at his hotel, there's a jacuzzi. And a woman who had just been through our program was in that jacuzzi with her husband, the man with his wife. And the woman was reading my book, You're Not Who You Think You Are. And the man said, oh, that's interesting that you're reading Mr. Golden's book, because he said, I've come here to meet him. She said, we're having lunch with him tomorrow. You want to see if I can get you invited? And so his name was Juan Arias. He's in counseling in New York. And we sat there, and his wife was adorable. He said, Albert, I need to write your testimony, and you need to write mine for how God speaks and how God moves, because I got on the plane, and I said, he'll be on that plane. I was on that plane the night before, because
wow.
I'd been working in New York. He was on the same flight 24 hours later. And so we swapped. I mean, he sent me the two books, that, and they're kind of interesting. And he said to me after lunch, two-hour lunch, he said, well, I can go home and report. He's better than his book. Now, let me tell you why you came on the line and said what you did today, and why Juan said that. I am often asked to be on programs with those in the Pantheon, you know, the big pieces of stuff. And God always lets me be asked out by one of them or sit and talk. And I'm telling you right now, many times I thought, God does use the most imperfect instrument to get his word out. And he probably says, oh, that guy's got such a big ego, but maybe the ego is so big he'll listen to the guy in the sky that'll write through him. But that's what people do say about me. You know, I have a great deal of anonymity because I was not one of the ones that you see on all the shows. If you'll notice, nobody gets the shows anymore.
Yeah.
Because their ratings are falling, and they're trying every trailer trash technique with big movie stars and everybody's bad boy, bad girl behavior. And I guess they're still getting those people that want to see that. But the real deal here is you're the star. Here's some books that get you to where I think I've come. Your assignment may be different from mine. You know, I never had children. This Scott's like my child, and those twins are coming in October. They'll be my grandchildren. But there are people out there that when I see them, a family, they're loving. I'm going to the French Open with a godson whose parents hung the moon as far as I'm concerned. His sister's a diva at the Met. So I just joy around them. They fight and they fuss so much, they clear in 3 minutes. We laugh. We have fun. I said, God, I'm so glad y'all were rich. God, I can't even get my checkbook to add, you know. And they laugh. And everywhere they go to the Caribbean, they fly me down. And, you know, how lucky can you get? But I'll tell you, and I want everybody that's listening to the sound of my voice today to understand, here's my prayer. God, if I ain't got it, I don't want it, and I don't need it till you want me to have it. Because I've been rich, and I've been poor, and I am what I am today. But I will tell you, I will not pay the price the way that I did before to have a lot more than I have today.
And I think that's an important piece, too. I mean, I think that that's truly, you know, what is it that, yes, it's great that people are so generous to you and that they, you know, you get what you need whenever you need it. But, you know, this push about, you know, having to have everything bigger, better. I mean, it's a part of us that we're just never satisfied. And then that's the ego part of us that just, you know, will never be satisfied.
You know, I want to tell, if I may, a very fun, interesting, synchronistic story.
Mm.
When I was still drinking, I went to a psychic, and I put an asterisk by it. Be very careful who you go to.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, this person was unbelievable. I'm just going to do a one-minute version. He said, you've been sick. I had alcoholic hepatitis.
Mm.
I didn't look at the alcoholic part. My mother just had open-heart surgery. He said, you've been sick. Quit drinking, which I did 2 years later. Your mother came to the Valley of the Shadow of Death. She's had open-heart surgery. She had it 2 weeks before he said that. She lived to be 80 years old. She died at 80. He said, you're going into real estate. You will sell a very famous movie star from the Burbank Studios, a house 150 miles from here, and said it will change everything about you and it will indirectly be how you got sober. I want you to know that the very next day, a broker friend said, since you're having to do so much bed rest, study these books, I'll pay for you to go to real estate school. The day I got my license, somebody took me above Santa Barbara. I was living in Los Angeles to see El Adobe de Higuas, a 35-acre, the most beautiful state in the world. 2 days later, seeing the property, I got my license, and 2 days later, I was waiting for a woman at Joe Allen's restaurant on 3rd Street in Los Angeles, and an actor fell over my foot, and he was an actor that I'd seen in my meditation, having seen him on television, and 90 days later, he bought that property for $3.1 million. It was John Travolta.
Oh.
And that's all in the movie that I've written. Well, the thing is, I'm trying to show you, it's kind of like you and me meeting. You know, we met on the radio. So what? Connection, lights, turning on lights, turning up the volume, empowering people. So, I'm sure there are other people out there telling people how to cook somebody's recipe to make them fatter, but just laughing with Paula, what deans. But, I don't know. I just think that if my message always to people is that I'm not that special. That wasn't what I said when I was 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. But I'm not that special. God speaks to the most unlikely people. You do have to have, like you go to school, I call it the school of remembering. You have to go through and see what you have to give up, what you have to forgive, what you have to write about, what you have to, the mold you have to break. Turn up the volume of the still small voice, find God within you. I say this in churches. I speak at Unity. God may or may not be in here, but he's within each of us. But the thing is, I think people really are sitting on a powder keg of potential.
Yeah.
And if we've lit the fuse today so that they can have that opening within themselves, then we've served our purpose, I think.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about one of the things you talked in Signs and Wonders, which is, you know, looking at your family. Because a lot of times, we don't do that. We avoid our family. We divorce our family. We try and get as far away from our family as possible. And it's truly when we can learn to understand and forgive, just, you know, whether it's forgiving them or just understanding them and where they came from, and then what are the pieces that we took from them, because I think that's really huge. And you did talk a lot about it in your book, and it certainly was part of your own personal journey. But, you know, I think it's an important piece.
The family is the karmic mirror.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, let me just go at it like this. People come to me, and it'll be on the phone. They'll send a picture. I'll do the chart, whatever. Or they'll sit in my living room. I have a home office. And I will start describing. I'll say, oh, and your mother was this and whatever. And she'll say, Albert, you're describing me. I said, is that how your mother was? And they'll pause a few seconds. Yes. I said, see, the family is the karmic mirror. A man comes in. You're having problems with drinking. Well, I don't know that it's a problem. I said, when did you have your last blackout? Then I back into the family, and I'll say, Did your father drink too much? Yes. Uncles? Yes. Brother? Yes. Good. DNA, alcoholism. And that's what God used. He used it as a drug to kind of get you to your bottom so that you could put the plug in the jug, get some help, clean and clear, and you can start like what my father and I did. You know, my family always thought he kept drinking. He was about 18 or 20 years sober when he died because I called him on the phone to make amends, and he died the next day. But then I say to the person, you know, you can be the first generation of the males in the Smiths or the Joneses not to be an alcoholic. You can then begin to build the temple that God planned, because the architect, you, still have the plans. And so now, when you learn to clean and clear, that's why, you know, it's important to look at the family mirror, the karmic mirror, is that you need to take an inventory. You know, you really need to look at your stuff. I'll tell you, I've had psychiatrists come through my program. I've had justices come through my program, lawyers, doctors, people, big people, very wealthy people. There's nothing that will put a barricade between you and God's will like money. You know, the Bible says, for the love of money is the root of all evil. And, you know, for some reason, resonant frequency, vibration, and the courage that my own roadmap found to get them to my table, I'm fearless. I mean, I just sound like I'm kind of fun on the radio, but I'll tell you, I am really so tough love, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important because I think these are the places. It's the shadow work that needs to be addressed that we're not looking at because we're, you know, we get caught up with these, you know, some of those spiritual teachers that are into complete spiritual bypass and, you know, it's all wonderful, and it's, you know, it's about being in the bliss, so just stay in the bliss and don't deal with any of the things that you have to deal with. And I think that that's, you know, a big problem with some of the new age people out there, because, you know, it's not addressing what we need to address. We can't truly heal, we can't truly evolve if we're not looking at the shadow. So
could we do something? We haven't done it yet.
Okay.
Could we kind of give how to find me? Because
yeah,
a lot of people may not can afford or ready to come for the intensive, but they might want to talk with me and do an astro-intuitive session by phone. And the number is 928-282-4723, or they can go to info@SedonaIntensive.com, and Linda or Scott will set it up. I think that it's really important. You know, I call it the starter set. There are times that people will have a session with me, and then it'll go here, here, here. 3 or 4 years later, we get a call, another session. 2 weeks later, they show up. They're ready for whatever it is we do. I have to say this with all due respect to everybody trying to help. We are not the first thing that should be on your agenda if you are still worshiping other people. If you've given your power away to money, property, prestige, a movie star, or a big piece of stuff in the spiritual world, whether book writers or whatever, then you may not be ready. If you are ready to go from total surrender to new assignment and new life that will take you to the heights of heaven, come. And you know, there's a scholarship program that is on our website if people can't afford it. So I just think that if people will get started, because an hour with me is very invaluable. I have somebody calling from Israel this afternoon.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt that you pull it all out for people, and that's important, because it's one of the areas, which is why I admire you so much, that, you know, that too many people don't do, and we need to. So before we started, you were sort of talking about you know, how we're moving towards 2012 and what that means to you, and, you know, how we're going from the unconscious to the superconscious. And you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I do. Now, remember, I've forgotten to say these are my opinions.
Yeah.
You create your own reality. But I want to give them a simple one. I don't want them to have to go through, my God, there's those Mayan calendar Callahans in them. They want you to learn 3,900 volumes and go through this laborious trigonometry and calculus of consciousness. And I say hello in there, because I really want people to listen to me. Now, this is the simplicity. If you have made, while you are asleep, the dream state, because as most people have 7, 8, 9 hours, okay, if while you're there and while you've been watching movies, that's what it works out. I mean, I'd love it if I could someday do a thing on dreams with you.
Hmm. But sure.
If you are ready, there will be, like, the thing in New York Times where the little ball starts to fall when the countdown comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're now in the countdown period, June, July this year, in less than 2 years. So I really feel like that we are going to begin, like Buddha says, wake up. I love that. I mean, somebody said to me, should I study Buddhism? I said, oh, yeah, let's do it right now. Wake up. So if you are awakened while in the dream state, see, kind of like the contradiction of terms there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you will more and more embrace, and you will more and more be a part of the tidal wave of consciousness shift that is coming in 2012. Now, people say to me, well, you know, there are those people from the Church of God or whatever, and the Baptist, they're saying Jesus is coming again. Well, I said, if Jesus is coming again, he'll show up in your heart.
Hmm.
I said, I think he said, I've been there once, I ain't coming back. But I feel like that people will begin, if they survive, because you've seen, my goodness, you know, I was telling you what the aspect was with that Saturn-Pluto opposition, where we had earthquakes, we had tornadoes are still ravaging Oklahoma and Kansas and Alabama, the oil spill in the Gulf region, continual wars. The man that tried to blow up Times Square. Well, there will be people that have made it an assignment to leave in the name of the dramatic tragedies that happen. I mean, you know, don't try to talk to people in Haiti or Chile about, you know, this shift, because a lot of them are still in the mourning and digging out and reconstruction. So that will go on, and it may even intensify. But I will tell you, it is not about the end of the world. It's about the beginning of the way the world always was, and the creation and imagination and architectural design of God, the macrocosmic God. So I think that more and more people, I'm going to say this, you know, I love it when I can borrow. I mean, I quote scripture all the time because I'm no longer am standing at a pulpit trying to kill people with it. But there was a song when I was a kid that I sing sometimes in my head, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. And so his is, I think, ours and the God within, and I think that glory, back to my powder keg thing, something will awaken, something will come alive, and people will begin to come up toward the higher chakras. And, you know, when you get your throat and your crown, you know, you're having a reunion. You know, you're having a congregational meeting of that was always there, but that you needed the karmic endurance to be able to get to that part that you could have an active part in. Listen, I am very huge and big on energetics, vibrations, resonance, frequency. And I tell people, they'll say, they write these letters, oh, my God, I can't believe what I got out of coming to Sedona. I said, you can't believe it. I said, I'm the one that you're paying homage to. And I said, all I can tell you is I'm surprised people still come, and I'm surprised that God can still speak through me, because I said, you got it kind of wrong. We could have done recipes. I think that God, because you should come to my house sometime. Okay. It is more like a sanctuary. It's got 24 trees in it, and there's some angels that are on pedestals on my wall. But I tell them, you came in faith, and you're leaving with the grace of God to do what he said he wanted you to do with your life. And I have to come back to the beginning, and that is that woman out there raising those children, those people that are tilling the soil, still trying to get something out of the toxic ground that we keep polluting, and those people that are doing what looks like inconsequential jobs. We never know, as the Bible says, when you're entertaining the Christ consciousness, the Buddha consciousness, the Krishna consciousness, unaware. When you never know, I mean, it's just unbelievable, the things that come back to me with a phone call, letter, an email, running into somebody on a plane, because I travel a lot, telling me something that I said, and I say to myself, I don't remember this person. And then they'll say something that'll trigger it. But I want people to honor where they are and be alert. When the bell rings and you get the message, go where the great coach, you know, that's, I call God a lot of things, a clown, a guy, a coach, whatever. Go where he sends you, because when you go there, great things will happen. Can you imagine? I'm sober 30 years and 3 months, and can you imagine where I was February 18th, 1980, living in a tiny apartment, driving an old beat-up car, thinking my life was over, and the life that I thought I was living was over, and the real, authentic me, with what I'd come to do, was put right there, and you should see the way I live today. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You can't get there from here unless you follow God's roadmap.
Yeah, and you certainly are living proof that that is, you know, you're nothing that special, but yet you've listened, you've done the work, you've done the prayers, you've done the meditation, you've done the clearing and the shadow work to allow you to get where you are, to be a clearer conduit or messenger of the signs and wonders that are always around us.
Well, one more time, can I give the phone number?
Absolutely.
It's 928-282-4723. And if they want more information, or do it by email, info@SedonaIntensive.com.
Well, Albert, you've been, you know, a great pleasure as always. I hope we don't take a whole year. That was very much my fault. So maybe we can have you on earlier in the fall this year, and we'll talk about
it.
Dreams. Because that sounds very exciting. I like dreams. And I know that you end the book with saying, you know, change you and you change the world. And
change the world you touch, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, we think it's always something so big, but it's really truly about, you know, what's within us that will allow us to impact the world in a much different way. So thank you, Albert, because you're an inspiration, you're a lot of fun, and I love what you do.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right.